Good morning, and welcome to Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. You're listening to Yamaya by Jay Daniel. He's an electronic musician, producer, and selector from Detroit, Michigan. Today, we go under the broad umbrella of theater and performance to ask, how do movement and circus arts intersect with society beyond the art? How does theater serve the community outside the playhouse and after the show is over? And what are some objectives of the players beyond entertaining? Wise Fool New Mexico, based in Santa Fe, and Bread and Puppet Theater in Glover, Vermont, practice circus-style performances with larger-than-life puppetry to address political and social issues. They combine age-old and underrepresented forms of performance through comedy, drama, imagery, and movement. Our discussions with these two groups dive deeper into the philosophies of artivism, political action through theater, and youth development through circus. In 1997, artists from Wise Fool Puppet Intervention in California joined with Clowns Without Borders and New Mexico-based artists and activists to bring a puppet circus tour to Zapatista villages in Chiapas, Mexico. This collaboration inspired a small collective of women artists to begin offering hands-on experiences in puppetry and circus arts, and thus Wise Fool New Mexico was born. Out of garages and in old horse corrals, they built grassroots circuses, giant puppet processions, and taught their first summer circus camps. Our first conversation is with Oriana Lee. Lee is a teaching and performing artist who has been entertaining since childhood. She's been on the leading edge of the home educating movement for the past 20 years, and she's currently the education and outreach director for Wise Fool New Mexico. One of the roles you have at Wise Fool is education and outreach. Can you describe the nature of that work and how you came to it?
Oh boy. How I came to it. I'm a lifelong educator. So I'm going to say I was born for this. And how I came to this specific position, fortunately, it was created kind of with the idea of what I already was doing at Wise Fool in mind, but there was not this specific position for someone to focus on the educational and curriculum components. Starting in social circus, I think Wise Fool had a lot more of the performance and theatrical pieces and social justice pieces forward in the initial years. And over time with growth, I think we shifted to just a little bit more of almost like a school model. So the educational format is now so prevalent that we needed a position for it. And thank goodness with my training in education, I've homeschooled for 20 years. And then I certified to teach high school secondary education before that. And so I kind of got a little bit under my belt that lends itself to that. But again, besides homeschooling, I hadn't really used the curriculum pieces and development and that piece of it until this position was created. And then as far as the outreach is concerned, that extends from the volunteers that we work with at the organization, outward into the community, to the programs that we offer and working within the schools as well.
So how did you find Wise Fool and get involved there?
Fun question. So in this homeschooling journey, I was graduating my second oldest and he was 15 and he knew he was ready to go away to school, but he didn't feel quite old enough to go away to school. He knew he wanted to do circus arts, which I didn't know until he mentioned it. That was even a thing. I'm like, you go to school for circus? Like, I thought you just have a cool talent and you just hop on the back of a train. And so he dialed me into it and I started looking around and Wise Fool, New Mexico is what was offered here. He was doing some training one day because when he first started going there, I originally just kind of volunteered. I wasn't participating, but he was doing a training and needed me and to be a body to stand in and hang upside down. And when I hung upside down, everything from my nine-year-old self came rushing back to the pit of my center and reminded me of how great that feeling felt. And from there, I never left. I just needed to be reminded how wonderful it was to hang upside down. And I thought, I'm never going without this again in life.
That's really cool. So really through your son. Finding your way there for your son. Can you tell me how the idea of including circus arts in school curriculums is generally received?
I can speak to our system specifically. Last year alone, we worked in almost 20 schools. So to me, that says alone success, shows that there's a lot of reception around it. I think that sometimes we have to come in maybe through a back door. It doesn't always look circus forward. Maybe it's life skills or physical education or something like that. But on the whole, it's been well received. And Wise Fool has been in the community for 20 plus years. So I think we're well known for our outreach and the things that we offer in terms of youth development. So over time, we've grown in that way, like I said, and we're in all of the schools from elementary. We work up to high school. We have been in NMSD, School for the Deaf, for the last couple years. So, yep, we are well received.
One of the foundations of Wise Fool programs is promoting dialogue and teaching things like communication, problem solving, conflict resolution, cooperation skills through collaboration. How does this work in general with youth? Can you give an example?
I think probably the easiest example I could give would be acrobatics. And acro requires all those things you mentioned. Got to have key communication to keep safe, to know where everybody's moving, problem solving. How do I move my body in this way? How do I strengthen this particular part so that I can support whatever kind of weight that's being supported? Conflict resolution, again, being able to work with another person in terms of their level of comfortability and yours. You know, their level of challenge and yours. And then cooperation skills along those same lines. You know, partner acro is all about the partner piece. So it takes that completely relating. And I think that's a perfect example of a skill that we offer. And we are very strong at Wise Fool that incorporates all of that. And I think that impacts youth, but it also impacts us as adults.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, what you said, being in relation to another body in a very physical way and tuning into that. So based on your work with youth, what are some of the outcomes you've witnessed for young people? Can you give an example of maybe something you've seen where a youth's life is changed through the arts?
Oh boy, so many examples. Something recent, I received a message from a parent on Facebook thanking me for being their child's first teacher. And the child is, I think, 6 years old and has never been in a public supported program because the child is autistic and on the spectrum. And this parent has never been able to trust a program to support these learning pieces and to be inclusive enough to where she would feel comfortable bringing her son and allowing him to participate. So this past fall and into the spring before we all shut down, this student was absolutely excelling, doing exceptional in circus, but also in those social emotional skills. And I think that's one thing that the parent probably wasn't planning for. So I think that's a perfect example of just a very recent case where a child's life and the parent's life was impacted through circus and what circus offers.
Well, going back to what you said at the beginning, I wonder, what did you see for your own son?
Wow. Well, one thing about Wise Fool specifically is it doesn't have a lot of a competitive nature in the building of how we train and teach. And that's on purpose. But it also does allow a place for that, if that's what's in a youth's nature. So he came to the table more along that really aggressive, like I said, he's a b-boy breakdancer, and he had goals to set. And I really love the way that even though Wise Fool isn't really built around that competitive sport type of teaching, he was still able to come in and find his place in that and able to excel in all the ways. And I've just seen him be able to bust through the roof. At 16, he was coaching. You know, he's now performing across the world. So life-changing in that way specifically, for sure, and giving him the opportunity to use skills that may not have been pulled out in other outlets, forums, activities, especially as a young Black male.
Like what kind? What kind of skills, activities?
Well, the fact that he does get the chance to be a leader and to be forward working with youth. And some of those, at 16, a lot of the youth are in his same age group. And then, you know, he was teaching adults and people older than him. But to be able to trust him and what he truly brought in the skill in that way, and to be able to cultivate it in the Wise Fool way, to where he can utilize that as an educator at such a young age. I just think that's remarkable. And I've seen that happen over and over again. You know, there are youth that come in, sometimes don't really know what they want to commit to in circus or in life. And through their experience in circus, they leave the program, say they're 18, knowing exactly full range what they want their life to look like. And we know that can change, but to at least be able to have a plan is a great thing.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think of when I was 18 and my my idea about life. And anyway, and maybe you touched upon this a little bit. We talked earlier about cooperation skills, problem solving, communication. And I kind of wonder about the critical thinking or ethical aspects and how that plays a role, if it does.
Yeah. And I guess when you say ethical, it's so wide. You know, it's like ethical along exactly what lines. But I like to think of Wiseful as an upholder of human ethics. So I think as far as that's concerned, absolutely, because one of the things we focus on and that falls in heavy with our social justice is focusing on the whole self and what it takes for us to be in relationship as human beings and how to do that without tolerating but accepting each one of our differences in these ways, but also knowing as humans, we're all together in this.
Right. And that kind of makes me think a little bit about the performance aspect of Wise Fool. And before we talk about that, actually looking at that term Wise Fool, as it relates to the idea of a court jester or a clown, someone to put on a spectacle and use humor to inform the views of those in power. This is straight from your website and the idea behind the name. And how that is really used to open dialogue about social issues. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that I really love the most about being able to be a performance artist and find the intersection for social justice and, like you said, ethics and all of these pieces coming together. And it's like when it comes to speaking about hard issues or tough issues or things that we don't always dialogue about, I really love that analogy of like knowing that you have to give medicine, but it doesn't always have to taste bad. You know, like sometimes you can doctor it up. And I talk sometimes about how like those Luden's cough drops versus like the Halls, drastically different taste. One is almost like candy and the other is just kind of like, oh, this is definitely medicine, but they both serve the same purpose. And so I think we're like that with the sugar up a little bit, not too much to minimalize anything that's happening, but to make it go down easier. Because sometimes that is a better way for people to receive these hard topics without being on the offensive off top or the defensive off top.
I wonder if you can talk about that in relation to right now and this summer and Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah, I think one of the ways directly we've done this particular Wiseful thing that we do is we've been taking our puppets out. And some people have been going out on stilts and joining in the protests and the marches and some of the actions around the things that have been happening, particularly in Santa Fe and some extending to Albuquerque. But I think that, again, there's so much harshness coming across, as it should be, in emotion and in tone. And say someone's on the mic and they're telling the story and everyone's drawn in heavy, but then you look up and you see this big gigantic puppet. It's like it may say in racism on it or something that we're trying to promote, but at the same time, it still does bring that smile because it's art, you know? And so again, it's that way of just bringing that softness and opening the dialogue at the very least. It's not to solve anything, you know? This isn't specifically solution focused.
So at this point, the internet gods or maybe even the theater gods kicked us out of the Zoom call. We eventually get back on and all will be well, but let's take a break, and when we're back, more from Oriana Lee of Wiseful New Mexico, and let's continue with Jay Daniels' music from the album Broken Nose, spelled K-N-O-W-Z. Broken Nose signals a departure from Jay's previous output, disillusioned with the constraints of drum programming and wanting to find a way to translate human feeling and emotion, he retreated to his mother's basement, picked up his drumsticks, and started recording into a multi-track mixer for the first time. This was key for Jay in working to create an album that sounded more live, more natural, and more human. Here's Paradise Valley. Thank you. back to the Taft Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. Today, we're talking about how circus arts go beyond the art in engaging with society about social issues and the development of the whole person. Let's jump back into my conversation with Oriana Lee. She's one of the co-executive directors at Wise Fool New Mexico. Wise Fool's mission is to ignite imagination, build community, and promote social justice through performances and hands-on experiences in the arts of circus, puppetry, and theater. Here's Oriana describing a soft space to talk about hard things.
So basically we just have the ability to hold a soft space in the middle of these hard times. And like I said, I really love that because as a mother, I can relate to that with children. You know, so many things with them, they will be more receptive of things they don't even want to do if you just kind of package it nice.
If there's been a situation or example where you can talk about some of these tools that you learned, that you've learned over the years, or you just know, in terms of engaging in that dialogue and keeping it in that, you call it a soft space.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question and a deep thing to dive into, because one thing I want to say is all spaces aren't for everyone. Like, everybody's not to hold the same space and to do the same things. Like, the what you carry in your personality may be more of a confrontation that is straight and stern, and that's how you communicate. And if you're doing that, I think with still a care attached and from a place of proper intention, that can even still be received. So let me say that first. You know, we all have our own spaces that we occupy. But one of the things I like to think about is there's this thing called carefrontation. There's a speaker called Lisa Nichols, and she talks about carefrontation versus confrontation. And I think that's the essence of what we're doing in these ways. We're coming with a presence of love and humility. And at the same time, the need to strike a chord and disrupt and teach. But I think the carefrontation is a big thing. So I'd say intention. If there's something I can point to, it's that there's an intention. It's not just a lashing. It's not just a being defensive and saying, we're just going to teach you, get it together. You know, there's intention of holding space for a relationship and holding space for community.
Yeah, so even on a personal level, just that those concepts, approaching even a conversation with a family member or a friend, just kind of a leading up to it, approaching it with those ideas in mind, I could see how that could be helpful. Yeah, and I think, I mean, gosh, right now, the amount of dialogue that needs to happen between people, not only the people in the government, but I mean, just people are between families and between friends. So yeah, I'm really kind of fascinated about the discomfort that's involved in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's a real thing. And it's not for us to try to take on for another person to avoid that. It's our job to bring whatever we're supposed to be bringing, like, you know, plant the seed and don't be attached to watching it grow per se, just trust that it will.
Gotcha.
You know, so I think that's part of the approach. And it's like I said, it's in what Wiseful has always done. Before, there was this big, wonderful, elaborate circus school studio space in all of the schools around the city. What Wiseful was a group of women standing for what they believed in and standing for change. So it's so at the core of what we do. I feel like me being attracted to Wiseful was because it already existed there. And that's something that I guess I was kind of looking for. I think we're all looking for that. One of the things I always talk about Wiseful being is a place where one can be unapologetically themselves. And I think that's the essence of what I'm saying. Like, someone that you want to understand something, your point of view, your perspective, it's that thing we learned in kindergarten. You still want to treat them the way you want to be treated, right? It's really easy. It's like the golden rule. So I think in doing that, again, that's how that carefrontation exists. How would I want to receive some hard information? How would I want to be told I'm wrong or I should look at something different? I should consider a different perspective.
Yeah, is that, can you make a connection with that in terms of the movement aspect of circus arts? Is there a connection there?
I can't say that it is. What I can say is Wiseful is uniquely itself. That's one thing I've learned in being a part of the larger circus network. And when I'm able to travel to conferences, Wiseful New Mexico always comes up as like a leading edge program. So I'm learning over the years, many of the things that we do are really cutting you know, edge on terms of, in terms of social justice, especially, but even just in how we approach relationship. And it's great to be inspiring in that way. You know, it's part of our mission is that we inspire. And I think that's how true change really happens, lasting, more showing than telling.
Just a whole body, mind, spirit approach. Okay, let's learn how to do a flip. But yeah, if we need to stop and understand how to communicate with each other, we're going to do that too, kind of thing.
Absolutely. And that's pieces of it. But the holistic piece even expands to like history. So then you have a cultural appreciation for whatever you're doing. These skills and things that we do at Wise Fool all come from somewhere, and most of them different places. So for instance, in teaching stilt walking, one of the ways that Wise Fool got into stilt walking was some authentic stilt walkers from Africa teaching this practice that we now know as Moko or Moko Jumbi, and learning the importance of the African and sacred piece of stilt walking. So now we don't just teach stilt walking carelessly, we teach it with that sacred piece attached. And that in itself, like I said, brings in that cultural piece that allows a little bit of seeing outside of the lens and scope that we are, you know, used to seeing out of. And it opens up the mind that people are different and that, you know, we all bring some things that are valuable to the table.
Where does this come from? Who does this come from? And then what does it mean for me or anyone to also practice or also engage in that? And I can see how that's super powerful.
Yeah, it takes away the cultural appropriation, which we're very careful around. It doesn't mean we're perfect and we always get it right, but we are always aware and paying attention to where we can get it right.
The last thing I want to talk to you about is, and it's something I noticed in your bio, well work environments. And now I don't know, maybe this isn't relevant for you now, but I was curious about that because to me it really applies to everything we've been talking about, because talking about Wise Fool as an organization and different approaches, to me this kind of well work idea somehow fits into there. I don't know, does it?
You're speaking to me personally and my well work?
Yes.
My work? Yes. Yes, it totally fits because, again, we're talking about the holistic approach to the person, right? So I think that even before I came on as like resident Wise Fool life coach, all of these pieces were still in place around mindfulness. And I think that me being there and my practice has helped pull some of that together, but it absolutely is a place for that. And I find a way to work it into almost everything that I teach, even if it's just a breathing technique. You know, that definitely is going to come in handy with no matter what we're doing at Wise Fool, whether we're doing something physically engaged, mentally, that opportunity to center and ground, it's absolutely necessary.
One of the things I get curious about when I talk to somebody like you who seems so well and so vibrant and has a lot of tools for addressing just, you know, what we have to go through in life, no matter who we are, kind of thing. Do you find for you, do you practice these things that you teach?
I absolutely do. Again, I don't practice them perfectly because we are all on the journey, right? And it's hard to keep everything in view at all times. But I have to say I'm naturally led to this work. Wellness work is something I've always done without even effort. I started out by just doing vision boards and having vision board sessions for women who were homeless and needed a place to gather around some intention. And I started that work in Memphis, Tennessee, in one of the poor zip codes in the country, actually. And so through that work, I think I started to develop a groundedness and understanding how we all connect as human beings and how we all need this work. You know, it's no, you can't make too much money to need to learn to breathe and to tap into your breath. You know what I mean? And you can't be too low on the ground and too down in the bottom to show some gratitude for something. The full range of mindfulness can work for all of us. So yes, I do practice it often. And specifically the breathing thing, I think is one of the pieces that as I've gotten older, I just incorporate that more and more because it's such a fast way to centering and to de-stressing. And you know, we all know the stress and anxiety is battling for attention all day long.
Okay. So, I mean, my final question would be, you know, we're kind of in the middle, late summer, kind of school's starting. What are you hopeful for and what are you looking forward to?
I'm excited about what it looks like to implement things new, just because it's what we always do in circus. This whole online component to what we do is definitely not ideal for me, And I'm really loving seeing the ways we're able to push boundaries and still find a place for circus in all of this. So that's probably what has me most excited, is just to see the way that we're on the leading edge once again. And I think one thing that's unique about this time that probably is driving so many of us to be on one accord is there's been a unified and a uniform slowing down that we've never seen. So then there's even a chance to grieve the old and embrace the new in a way we never have time to do, because we're always just slammed from one thing to the next in the middle of real life. So I think that's another one of those beneficial pieces, we can call it that, to this whole pandemic, is that it has forced us on one accord in this way. And I think it gives us a chance to really see where we all value one another, again, along the lines of just being human.
Well, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure to speak with you about these things.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
We just heard from Oriana Lee from Wise Fool, New Mexico. In a minute, my co-producer Crystal Starr will talk with three folks at Bread and Puppet Theater in Glover, Vermont. In the early 1960s, a group of troubadours led by Peter Schumann rented out a small loft on Delancey Street in New York City's Lower East Side and began putting on weekly performances. Schumann, a sculptor, dancer, and baker, recently emigrated from Germany, and the group would distribute Schumann's bread to the audience, who would slowly chew the coarse sourdough as the puppet performance ensued. This eventually grew into Schumann taking shows on the road. He converted a small trailer into a mobile puppet stage, hauled it with the beat-up station wagon, and improvised a solo tour across New England, putting on impromptu performances in random towns and cities. Schumann's friends eventually underwrote the monthly rent at the Delancey Street space, and Schumann, with his wife, Elka, converted it into a theater and puppet museum, and the name Bread and Puppet Theater stuck. In 1970, Bread and Puppet moved to Vermont and eventually settled on an old dairy farm in Glover. It has since grown into a vast community. Crystal Starr spoke to three company members.
I'm Josh Krugman. I am from Connecticut and Massachusetts.
I'm Tori Lynn Ashford, originally from Detroit, Michigan. I grew up just outside of Detroit in Port Huron, Michigan.
My name is Uriel Nahara, born and raised in Santa Ana, California.
I'm taking this quote from your website and from your about page, and it's a Peter Schumann quote, which I'm sure you are very familiar with. And he says, "We have two types of puppet shows, good ones and bad ones, but all of them are for good and against evil." What does this mean, and what is an example of a bad puppet show?
I love that quote, and I'm grateful that you picked it out, because I think it really gets to the heart of what this theater is about. For us, more important than creating a perfect show, or even a good show, in the sense of something of quality, is that we do something, together, something for our community or for the communities that we travel to visit, something that speaks to the present situation that we're all living through and figuring out together and trying to transform together. What we do often would be called bad, in the sense of puppets that are quickly made out of cheap and widely available materials like cardboard and twine and wire and sticks. Maybe also bad in the sense of under-rehearsed and loosely choreographed. But what we sort of keep in our sights is that all of that work is for the good, for hoping to inspire people to fight against injustice and fight for the world that we want to see and the world we want to create. And that work celebrates resistance, celebrates transformation, and denounces the forces of greed and violence that plague our collective existence.
My next question, I guess maybe Josh, this since I think you've been with the company the longest, my next question is for you. What does Bread and Puppet do?
So Peter, our director, has said that theater is not a finished form. We don't know what theater is yet. That gives us the freedom to, when we're making work, not have to start with always with a script or with actors, but always be reinventing what theater is and what theater can do by using all of the materials that are available to us.
You're listening to Crystal Starr talking with Bread and Puppet Theater Company members. When we come back, they get into the significance of the bread. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Tau Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. We're about to jump back into the conversation between my co-producer, Crystal Starr, and three Bread and Puppet Theater Company members, Josh Krugman, Tori Lynn Ashford, and Uriel Nahara. Today, we've been talking about how circus arts intersect with society beyond the art. Bread and Puppet Theater is located in Vermont and was started in the 60s by Peter Schumann. Since then, large and small-scale puppets mix with human characters to perform in theaters, street parks, city parks, really anywhere. So, where does the bread of Bread and Puppet come in? Let's find out.
I mean, the bread is the first word of the name of your company, Bread and Puppet. So that means that it holds a very significant element to your company and to your production as a whole. What is the importance of the bread and Bread and Puppet?
Well, it's astute of you to point out that it's the first word in our name, and our director, Peter, often says that the bread is the most important thing, that the theater is really an excuse to get people to break bread together. And it's obviously an old idea, is a kind of communion in that what we are offering is not entertainment. It's not just a laugh. It is an opportunity to bring people together to analyze our collective condition and to experience communities. Bread and Puppet shows, as Uriel said, can be very obvious or they can be a bit obscure and abstract. They can require a little bit of chewing, a little bit of analysis. And the idea is that we have to also analyze our world. People stay in the theater and they chew together and they think together and they talk together. And that's what we hope will yield some sort of transformation from that collective experience.
What does, I was reading your, I was on your website and I was reading the about section, sort of a synopsis of the history of Bread and Puppet and the motto or the paradigm that Bread and Puppet is. And I came across domestic resurrection. Can someone explain to me what domestic resurrection means and what are some results that you have seen from this phrase in the sense that it is a tactic or a phrase or means of a description of who Bread and Puppet is and what Bread and Puppet does. How does that translate to the community and what are some of the results of leading from this sort of idea?
To me, I guess it's like, I think, okay, domestic, I think of like things that happen in the household and like, you know, just even mundane jobs, washing clothes, sweeping the floor, like just very general experiences or things that people do every day, like kind of culminating and moving and shifting and changing somehow. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when you think about what influences a person so much in their political standing, in their view in the world, the number one influencer is the home. So by domestic resurrection, I've always felt that in order for there to be change, there first has to start with the change with oneself. And that starts to, if you start to accept and experience this change within yourself, that ripples so much to the rest of your community. It starts with your household. The children spread to their friends. The friends spread to their parents. The parents spread to their friends. And all of a sudden, you have a community radically thinking differently. So I think with the domestic part about it is just how simple and how close the change needs to happen to us for us to experience that full resurrection.
And the home can be, you know, you don't need a roof to have a home, you know, and I think we're all on this earth, which is a huge collective home in itself too. Mm-hmm.
Do you see the results of this phrase sort of play out in the communities and where you have performed or...
I think a really great example that I can think off the top of my head is during this tour that was supposed to go across the country that only lasted 2 weeks. The first week we did a week-long residency with Marblehead High School in Marblehead, Massachusetts. A series of different workshops that we did with these high schoolers. And there was one workshop in particular where there was this cis white male, very much a jock, and later on we ended up learning was the son of a police officer. Day one into these three-day workshops, he was the rowdy one. He was the like kind of class clown who wasn't taking anything seriously and just was there because he had to because I was a part of his class. He kept coming back because he was told that he didn't have to after that first trial. And he kept coming back. For the first time, you could tell that for the first time in his life, he was starting to question everything that had like been passed on to him through his like father, through his community of what was right and to them. And then realizing that he had never figured out what that means to him. And so for the first time, he was starting to have a conversation in his head. And he was in this newspaper report about the whole thing where he mentioned that, like, look, I'm a jock. You wouldn't imagine seeing me in this situation. But I kept coming for more because I didn't realize it was something that could happen. So I think about that exposure and how... just exposing this one person and all these different communities that he's involved in that we normally don't get to reach somehow got connected into this conversation. And although he might not change their minds or change their lives in any way, he brought something new to them, to that situation that they had never really experienced before. And that's kind of how that ripple I was talking about really works and finds itself.
What are some challenges that you met and adaptations that you've made due to the pandemic and that you may not have considered, right? Like, what are some things that you've done because of the pandemic that otherwise you may not have considered?
I'll just start by saying I've learned that it is necessary work to be performing at a time like this. You know, there's a lot of essential, non-essential work lingo stuff. And I think theater is an essential part of existing. And also I found challenging, being a part of a group and having to think about other people's needs in a certain way that I normally wouldn't, you know, like there's a variety of people who are here and have been collected, you know, who've come together, who've been magnetized and attracted to what the theater company does. And everyone's from all over. And so that with that, there's different perspectives and different ways of understanding domestic things or, you know, things that involve, because we're all trying to figure out the COVID and all of the necessary precautions together too. So there's just been a lot of really just having to be as transparent and communicative with each other in a way that maybe last year before COVID, you know, we wouldn't have to really delve deep into. And, you know, it affects everyone emotionally and personally. And so to be socially distanced from other people, but know that we are together in a pod, so we do have each other, is, you know, a blessing and a curse. But, you know, like, it's both things there. And so, yeah, there's been a lot of just navigating the different personalities and understanding of each other at this time.
Is there anything that I didn't touch on that you all would like to add or that you would like for our audience to know about Bread and Puppet?
I think like one thing that I would love to mention is just how Bread and Puppet isn't just the theater. It's a place of education with our apprenticeship program and teaching people puppetry and how to create shows. It's a place, it's a community center, a place where like people can come and be with one another and learn about one another and teach one another. It also is, I think, of like a jumping point to so much more than any of us realized before we got here. It's one main goal is just moving forward in a way that helps and benefits the whole.
I was just wondering if either Josh or Tori had anything else to add to that.
If people are listening and if what we have discussed seems interesting or exciting, I would encourage people to not only to consider coming to visit Bread and Puppet as a guest or an apprentice, but to bypass that step altogether if they want and take up this activist theater spirit of making work in their community with the people and with the materials that are available and not demanding of themselves that it be perfect, but taking it out into the street or out into the park or square or to the steps of City Hall before it's perfect and when it's relevant, and doing that with their friends and neighbors, whoever they can find. That's at the heart of what we do, and that's what we hope to inspire others to do as well.
That was Josh Krugman, Tori Lynn Ashford, and Uriel Nahara, company members of Bread and Puppet Theater, talking with Crystal Starr. Today, we've been talking about circus arts and puppetry and the real-life consequences that participation and simply just viewing displays and performance has on people and communities. Finally, here's a fragment of Wise Fool New Mexico co-founder and artistic director Amy Christian's presentation at a TEDx conference. The title of her talk, How Outdoor Theater Ignites Social Change.
Inflection looked at points of change where you choose to either armor up against the unknown or lay down your fear for a moment of vulnerability and possible transformation. Flexion really toward outdoor spectacle on a grand scale right here in the U.S. It had a soaring truss and aerial stilt acrobatics, and it reached thousands at public festivals from Miami to Seattle and Quebec to El Paso, all different kinds of audiences. And Flexion's daring physicality really leaped the bounds of possibility and inspired our audiences to see that anything can happen, that change is possible, and that each and every one of us can be the person that makes that change happen. Now, Flexion enticed countless people from their daily path into a threshold arts experience. And here's how. In our lives, we're kind of moving on these wheels and patterns. We're on these tracks, and that's, we just get from one place to another without really having to step into our conscious mind. Have you ever arrived home from work and you're sort of like, you have no recollection of the journey home? We've all done it, right? So you never really had to step off your track that whole time. You were on the wheel, you were in your unconscious mind, kind of going back through your day. And we all go through our daily lives this way all the time. So one day you're on your way home from work, you're just walking along, and all of a sudden, kabam, in front of you, there's this giant moving structure, and there's a stilt walker walking past you, and you look up in the air, somebody's dangling by their toes, and you're like, oh no, they might fall. You just stepped off the wheel. Your conscious mind has grabbed hold, and you, along with all of the innocent bystanders around you, are experiencing a theatrical world. You're responding with joy or awe or laughter, but you're also responding with and to all of the strangers around you. You're engaged together in a transient collective ritual. We don't have a lot of those anymore in our culture, right? This is a shared, vital, and conscious moment of human connection.
This has been Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Chelsea. Go to tcataos.org to share this broadcast with friends and family. TCA Radio Hour is brought to you in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor, and our local business partner, Community Against Violence. Thank you to KNCE 93.5 FM, streaming live at truetaosradio.com. Here's more music from Jay Daniel. Thanks for listening.